frightening with his Luger in his hand. But when he gets home to his children, he's a family man. But when it comes to the nitty-gritty, he can shove in his knife. Yes, he really looks quite religious. He's been an outlaw all his life. Me, I'm waiting so patiently, lying on the floor. I'm just trying to do this jigsaw puzzle.
Sorry, Mick.
Thank you.
Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a Wednesday night program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. But you know what? It's all about geeks. That's really what it's about. And therefore, geek wisdom. Just stay tuned. We'll explain shortly. Good morning. It is still a problem for me every show to not say this is a Saturday morning program. I'm still not out of that thing. Okay, this is Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. And talking to my two guests in studio and not yet talking to our one guest so far on the phone, I'm thinking the show may be evolving. This new time slot isn't during the Hour of the Wolf. Now, I'm not going to give up that title. That title has been with me for 39 years. That's not going to change. By the way, January is the 40th anniversary, in case anybody's wondering. But it is, whatever it is that I do, because it travels with me. It's geeky. Some might say nerdy or whatever. But when Steven Siegel, who was on this program, what was it, about 2.5 years ago?
Just about that. Close to three.
2.5, close to 3 years ago, was here. And you were talking about, at that time, some new anthologies that had just come out and Weird Tales, right?
That's correct. It was the 85th anniversary of Weird Tales.
That's right. That's right. And And Steve, who came to a reading at the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings, and we were talking about it 2 minutes ago, and I've already forgotten which reading it was that you were at.
It was the Barbara Krasnoff and Lev Grossman reading.
That's right, the Les Groveman reading, or the Lev Grossman. Lev should be here, by the way, in three. He was going to be here a couple of weeks ago, but we got thawed out. So we are rescheduling that. I suppose I should mention next week will be Keith DeCandido, by the way, on the program. We've got some very cool things coming up, including Billy Stallings, who is the daughter of Marie Leinster. And some say Leinster, but apparently Will Jenkins, who wrote under the pseudonym, said Leinster, Marie Leinster. Who knew? Well, we'll have a lot of stuff. So anyway, Stephen handed me an arc. This is not like, you know, not, we're not talking Indiana Jones here. He handed me an
Jim's face has not melted.
Yet. And again, that depends on the mushrooms. Sorry, it's all this off-the-air talk. I did tell that story on the air once. Moving right along, or at least attempting to, Stephen handed me a book called geek wisdom, the sacred teachings of nerd culture, as if that wasn't enough, that he had edited this book. The people that... That's quite a picture. I just saw in the back. I have the arc. I got the hardcover, actually from Genevieve Valentine, who is also here and is one of the authors of this book. Genevieve, who is also author of, what's the proper full title? Mechanique,
Tale of the Circus Trisulti.
I never get it right.
It's a trap. It's a trap for everyone.
This is your multiple appearance on the show, and yet not often enough. As we move to more geeky and nerdy stuff, we need to talk more about movies and stuff. And
I think that's all I did in this book also.
And if you corral people to come with you, like you did the last time with Liz, so much the better.
So who
else is in this book? Nora Jemison, N.K. Jemison, one of the great writers, one of the great new writers of the field who, you know, 10 years from now, they will be talking about the classic great writer, but, you know, don't have to fast forward. You can get her first two books now, and her third book is coming out this fall.
I believe so.
And the first one is up for the Hugo for best novel right now.
The first one's going to win the damn Hugo. I am such a rooter for her in this case. I don't know that it's going to win, but it was Nebula nominated.
It's a mighty good book.
It really is. The first book for everybody, by the way, is The 100,000 Kingdoms. And just read it and read her short stories. And the same goes, I mean, Mechanique is amazing. I haven't read the whole thing. I have heard chapters 1 and 3, and I have read through about number 5. So I'm moving right along.
It gets
there.
Even better.
No, I know. but Genevieve also is a blogger at – now, where's your latest gig?
Right now I am working on a series called Intertitles for Strange Horizons.
Strange Horizons talks about
good movies, which is a completely new experience for me. Because most of my visceral pleasure in media is looking at the really bad stuff and going, that's right.
The time before last that Genevieve came here was with John Joseph Adams, like the day before he's supposed to leave.
Yes.
And we're supposed to be promoting his book. And all that happens, the two of them come here trashing Tron Legacy.
We had just seen it. We had gone to dinner. We had seen Tron Legacy. It was so terrible that as we pulled up to the studio, we were still in shock.
It was disappointing.
That's all you can say? Disappointing?
He's from the United Nations of science fiction representatives. He's not allowed to take a stance.
That is my reputation, yes.
Okay, I would not call it disappointing because I didn't have any hope for it to begin with. So how can you be disappointed if you have absolutely no faith?
And what does our remote movie critic have to say about
Hello,
Tron Legacy?
Zachy.
Hi.
Okay, good. It worked. You're on the air. A third person involved in this book, a co-writer, is Zachy. Okay, Hassan?
That's right.
Oh, God. Thank you. Thanky Hassan is a professor of communications and media studies whose commentaries on politics and pop culture have been featured at the Huffington Post. I read your last blog, by the way. I really liked it.
His
regular meditations on geek movies and television can be found at his award-winning blog, zakiescorner.com. That's ZAKIESCORNER, zakiescorner.com. A Chicago native, he lives in Northern Cal. Well, where in Northern Cal are you?
I am in a town called Newark, which is about 20 minutes away from San Jose.
Okay, so you're not within broadcast range of KPFA.
I am not.
Okay, yeah, that's our sister station. So anyway.
I can't believe if you go all the way across the country, you still end up in Newark.
I think that's a metaphysical issue.
And I'm from Jersey.
Wherever you go, there you are.
What does that say? This is just a really, really cool book, gang. Let me say this because the people who put it together should not necessarily say all the good stuff, but they would be right if they did. The moment I saw the cover of the book was enough. But this is one of those books that you can open to any page, and have fun. I did so just now, and the header on the page is, Pinky, are you pondering what I'm pondering? I can't do the voice.
And you can do the voice, Jim.
No, not that particular one. Not that. Because you know what? I didn't watch the show quite enough. There are other cartoon voices I can endeavor to do. And earlier tonight, I did Helen Kane on the air. That's bad enough. 2 weeks ago, I was singing on the air. Oh, God. Gilbert and Sullivan, Sydney and I doing Gilbert and Sullivan. That was weird. They turned off the transmitter. It's true. I started at 1:30 at 2 o'clock. They just turned off the transmitter. Life is a bitch, now so am I. We were talking about Catwoman
before. We were talking about Catwoman.
We were.
Speaking of disappointing... We were talking about Catwoman, as she is apparently going to appear in the new Batman movie.
Yeah, and, you know, why bother? Why bother with you know, a new Batman movie?
Zachy, did you have an official opinion on this that's gone up yet, or are we working from, like, brand new material here?
As far as the Catwoman costume?
Yes.
Well, I'm kind of in a holding pattern until I see her not on a Batpod and angled oddly.
Yeah.
Do you think that Anne Hathaway is going to be worth seeing at any angle? Be honest.
Oh, wait a minute. The Devil
That's Wears a trick Prada question. Okay That's a trick movie. Question.
The Devil Wears Prada was an okay movie that has nothing to do with the Batman canon whatsoever.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. Okay. Well, okay. Well, unless you really work on it. But anyway.
I feel like when I first heard she was cast, I wasn't crazy about it. But Christopher Nolan has earned a lot of blind trust with me.
Okay, let me ask you. Has he really? Because he cast Katie Holmes in the first one, and it was so bad that he had to recast her himself.
Okay, good point.
Thank you.
But I figure every movie gets one, so I figure the movie itself was still good. Batman Begins.
I'm still trying
good.
To deal with Christian Bale.
Oh, really? Not a fan of Christian Bale?
Not a fan of Christian Bale in every single blessed film, okay? Christian Bale up to a certain point. I still think, oh, God, am I going to get it now, that Michael Keaton did a really good job. And I think everybody underestimates what Tim Burton did for the superhero movie.
I do not underestimate Tim Burton's superhero movie. I think Batman Returns is a fantastic
yes.
superhero movie.
Yes, it really
I actually
is.
Contributed the Catwoman quote because I think that Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman is one of the most well-rounded.
No pun intended.
Oh, Jim.
I'm sorry. It's radio.
But one of the few women in a superhero movie that has her own plot. We meet her completely separate from the hero. She has several scenes that have nothing to do with the hero, that are not moving the plot forward. It's her character.
And it's a good character. It's a good
plot. It's a fantastic yeah. character. The scene where she goes completely, like, psychotic break in her apartment and smashes
right.
the neon and starts sewing her costume. Amazing. Like, that's a chilling scene.
Yeah.
And it was not for the benefit of us knowing what she's like when she meets Batman. It's because Tim Burton thought she was worth getting to know. And you don't really see that a lot in superhero movies.
No, you really don't. And you know what was different about superhero movies then than now? They had humor.
Okay, Captain America had some good ones.
I read your blog on that. I haven't seen it yet.
If you've read my blog, it's like you've seen it.
Yeah, I got that impression. That's why.
I think all the Marvel movies have actually done a decent job of putting humor in. Ironically, all the Marvel Studios movies, the one that you would think would be the humorous one would have been Spider-Man, because Spider-Man was always cracking jokes, and yet they managed to make a Spider-Man movie the first time out that was almost perfect as a Spider-Man movie, except for one little thing, which was that he wasn't funny. I don't know how you do Peter
but
Parker
they,
and not make him funny.
They cast an actor who wasn't funny and put him opposite an actress who wasn't funny.
That's what I'm saying. How do you do that?
I don't know. They're trying again, and it's not going to be any better.
But Iron Man was funny.
They're giving him jokes. In the
Iron
movie,
Man was so. Very funny.
But it's Andrew Garfield.
Yeah, that's good.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
We didn't mean to call you up just to depress you with all of our superhero movie news.
Okay, but I do have a question. Am I the only person here who did not hate Green Lantern?
I think you're the only person here who saw
I think
Green
so.
Lantern.
I skipped it because everyone I trusted hated it.
And
Green Lantern was, for me, probably one of the most disappointing movie experiences of my life.
Oh, jeez.
And that is because Green Lantern is probably one of my top five characters. So
in comics, that, yeah.
In comics. And I had been waiting.
Because of like, the Silver Age Green Lantern, right? The Alfred Bester Green Lantern.
Well, I mean, just the whole concept. I mean, you name it. I mean, I've for more than 10 years now, I've been one of these people that's out there like, oh, wait till they get to Green Lantern. It's going to be great. No, it's a great concept. So I've had to eat crow for 2 months now, so that hasn't been pleasant.
I know, right?
Now, you see, I for one, loved that the art on, what is it, Owa? Uh-huh. I thought that the artwork was so perfectly pulp. I thought that it captured the EC Comics, DC Comics, the national look so perfectly. I thought the humor was decent. I thought that the superhero was sort of lame because Hal is sort of lame. That's his character. I thought it was in character, and I thought it made a certain amount of sense. I'm not going to say this is a good movie, but I liked it more than, say, Thor.
Wow.
And have you been to Captain America?
No. No,
wait,
I have not yet been
Captain America disappointing?
No.
Oh, good.
No, I was asking an open question.
Okay. He was testing me. And no, but I do have. I'm going to be doing a double feature. You want to come over, I'll cook. Barbara and I are putting together, we have the 1944 Captain America, and then we're going to watch, I have a copy of the new one.
Oh.
So. That's a double feature I am looking forward to after I catch up on the last two episodes of Torchwood.
I visited my father a few days ago, and he had decided it would be a wonderful idea to TiVo the Matt Salinger Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just watching it, enjoying every second. And God bless him for having the moxie to find the enjoyment. I was not able to do so.
I was actually just watching that about half an hour ago, no joke. And I was explaining to my wife how the Nazi Red Skull is an Italian fascist, and it makes sense within that film, and, you know.
All that, yeah.
Now, what year is that?
1990.
Yeah.
That's 90. Okay, I never saw that one. Or if I did, I only saw... Well, you see, I'm older than all of you. Okay. I mean, it's not that I saw the 1944 one, but by 1990, I wasn't watching the superhero cartoons on TV as much. And I should have come back to it when they started getting good, but I missed it. They were so junky when I was growing up. When, you know, in the 60s and 70s, they were so bad that I wouldn't watch them. And then out of the blue one day, on Cartoon Network or somewhere, I see a rebroadcast of one of these things and, like, wait a minute. This artwork is really good and all that. So I know that I've missed this. On the other hand, there's always, should I say, the brand name Netflix. There's always a way of finding them, and one day I will go on a binge.
As well I should. As any geek would.
Absolutely. So that's wisdom. What is geek wisdom? Question is tossed in the air. Anybody take it?
Well, you know, I guess the first question is, what is a geek? Because it's a word that we've seen evolve.
Are you listening to the radio now? Then you qualify. Sorry, but go on.
Well, I think that's true. I think that's absolutely true. You know,
With the fact that it's radio.
You know, geek is one of those things like pornography. You can't define it, but you know it when you see it.
Yes, but hopefully being a geek doesn't give you anyway.
Anyway.
an election.
But, you know, I think the way the word has evolved, you know, it's generally anyone who's a passionate fan of something in a very brainy way. But, you know, specifically if you look at the sort of traditional use of the idea of a geek over the past few decades, you know, I think it's someone who's a brainy, passionate fan of, you know, something that exists along one of two conceptual axes, which is math and myth. You know, on the one hand, you have the sort of math stuff that yields computer geeks and chess geeks and, you know, video game geeks. And on the other hand, you have the myth stuff that yields literature geeks and theater geeks and Greek mythology geeks and
radio geeks.
And radio geeks. And I, you know, I think one of the reasons why science fiction and role-playing games are like the two inherently most geeky things is because those are the places where math and myth intersect. You know, you've got literature based on science. You've got improv sword and sorcery based on the output of 20-sided dice. You know, you can't make a better nexus of geekdom than that. But so, you know, we were talking about the fact that over the past 15 years, you know, particularly since the internet's come around, we've seen the sorts of catchphrases and quotations that, you know, geeks used to only get a chance to say to each other, you know, in their 15-year-old, you know, covert lives or in science fiction conventions or, you know, rare places like this. And we've seen these quotations and these sort of memes propagate through the world at a much larger rate, you know. And
now some people are starting to get it.
Yeah, some people are starting to get it.
I mean, I would be in a meeting with people and they say something and I would say, I've got a bad feeling about this, and nobody would get it. Nobody would recognize that this wasn't just me having a bad feeling about something, but this was a quote.
A quote from Star Wars thrice or more over.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. And many other movies that were using the meme.
Right. So, you know, we said, you know, we think that geek culture has reached another one of these tipping points where, you know, the body of ideas and moments and references that we all know have sort of coalesced into, you know, what amounts to a new subcultural canon. And we wanted to take a stab in at least an impressionistic way of collecting, you know, some of the most important and some of the most beloved and some of the most enduring quotations from all throughout geek culture, from movies to books to comics to real-world science to video games and beyond. And, you know, we wanted to present all these quotations. There's about 200 of them in the book, along with one-page mini essays offering our interpretations, our unique interpretations of what those quotes mean to us, what we think perhaps they might mean to other people. So this is our stab at presenting a loose canon of what it is conceptually to be a geek, one reference at a time. And, you know, we hope it's a book that geeks can read and find stuff in that they get excited about, and that also it's a good gift for a geek to give someone who has never quite understood them, and they can say, here, look, read this book. This is what I've been trying to tell you for 20 years.
Let me say, because I'm not here to sell the book, this is a great gift book. It really, this is the kind